Hey everyone, this is another edition of the Rubble Room right here on Las Vegas Sun Sports Talk. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala, talking all things UNLV athletics as we head to November, first day of November when we're recording, which means we'll have basketball and football going on at the same time. Football, unfortunately, if you're a UNLV fan, nothing has really changed. They still need two wins to become bowl eligible, and it looks like the last two games against Hawaii and Reno will be the best chance. Of course, Brumfield is now back under center for the Rebels, and they're ready to roar after the bye week. Mike, what do you know about UNLV football?
Well, you hit the big story, which is that Doug Brumfield is back. He's practicing. He's back at number one on the depth chart. He's going to start against San Diego State. So they've got a chance. Whereas, you know, if you're starting Cameron Friel or Harrison Bailey or switching between the two against San Diego State, you have no chance to win that game. But with Brumfield, you know, you can run him out there and see what happens. They're still not. We're recording this on a Tuesday. So Marcus Arroyo had his weekly press conference yesterday on Monday. And a lot of the talk was about how the team is re-energized and how they got healthier over the bye week and they're refreshed. But when I look at the roster, I'm not sure they're quite there yet. You know, they're still missing their top two wide receiver, two of their top three wide receivers. Their running back is still out. They're still missing a lot of skill guys. So yes, they have Doug Brumfield back, but he doesn't have a full complement of targets and options. So I don't know if we'll see that offense, that same offense that we saw in the first month of the season when they look great. But Brumfield getting back is the big thing. So, yeah, they've got a chance at least at San Diego State now.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but I don't think anybody wants to go into the last 2 weeks needing two wins because that's just a formula for disaster. If anything in recent UNLV football history has taught us anything, it's to expect the unexpected. And listen, Hawaii and Reno are both improved from when the last time we talked, right?
Yeah. I mean, earlier in the season, it looked like those were two easy wins for UNLV, but Hawaii is showing some spark. I wouldn't say like that. UNLV will be favored, I would think, going into both of those games still. But, yeah, those teams are showing a little bit more life than I anticipated. I would not feel comfortable about going in there needing to win both of them, I don't think. I would still feel good. I would feel comfortable. But like you said, you're leaving the door open for something bad to happen.
Yeah, and I obviously, because I'm born and raised, I've been here a little longer than you, but, you know, I can still remember, you know, Mike Sanford needing to beat a winless San Diego State team at home to go to a bowl game and losing that game. And again, it's just, you know, maybe it speaks, Mike, to the fact that UNLV hasn't played in many meaningful games. As a football program, right? It's not like they've had a bowl game or a conference championship game or a must win. You know, at this time of the season, they're usually playing out the schedule and hoping to get better for next year, right?
Exactly. They are. I would even go back to a few weeks ago. They played that game at San Jose State where they were playing for first place. And they looked like the two biggest contenders in the division. And it was like, I went back through the schedules for previous years. It was the first meaningful game that UNLV played in five seasons. Like 5 years had gone by since the last time they played a game that mattered for the standings or for any reason. And you saw what happened to them. They were not ready to rise to the moment. San Jose State blew them out. So, yeah, if you put yourself in a situation where you've got two must-win games back-to-back at the very end of the schedule, that's a situation that requires some navigation. You've got to pilot that. And, like, who is going to guide the team through that emotionally, get them up at the right time, get them through practice that week, get them to reach – you know, it's stuff that requires a certain amount of, like, finesse and just know-how and – guidance. So you're relying on Marcus Arroyo, who's never done it before, Doug Brumfield, who's never done it before. All the guys who are in your leadership positions are guys who have not done that. And there's no, institutional thing that they can lean back on. It's like, oh, we're UNLV. We've been here before, because clearly no one is, that's not what UNLV football is. So yeah, everything about a 4-6 record going into those final two games, it seems like it's lining up against UNLV, except the fact that they're better than those, than Reno and Hawaii. That's like, they have that in their favor on paper. So on paper, they look good, but everything else that's not on paper is kind of aligning against them.
Yeah. And you know, it is what it is, regardless if they finish 5-7 or 6-6 or 7-5 or whatever it may be. There is going to be, I would say, is it fair to say that regardless of how the rest of the season ends, even if they don't, that's not fair. I was going to say, even if they didn't win another game, that they took a step in the right direction. But I think if they lost out, if they closed the season on a whatever game losing streak, then that would erase all the preseason progress or the early season progress, correct?
I think they've reached a point where if they don't make it to a bowl game, it's a disappointment. They started 4-1. I mean, they were 4-1. They were playing a game where if they beat San Jose State, they would have been the clear favorites to win the division. So you, to go from that to we've got to hang on against UNR in the final game of the season to try to, and if you lose that game, like that would be a massive disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's many people, including me, Mike, that think that that's the only game that matters, period.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Reno and get to basketball season is kind of been the long mantra of UNLV supporters. And listen, I don't know if making a lower tier bowl, I'd rather beat Reno than win the California Raisin Bowl or whatever bowl they're going to go to. You know, It's just, there's a trophy affiliated with it. It's, you know, this is the game. Like in my opinion, he has to win this game, right? You don't go and be the coach of Auburn and lose to Alabama every year and still think you're doing a good job. You know what I'm saying? You know,
I do get it. I'm not sure in the big picture if I agree that it's bigger than a bowl game, because I think going to a bowl game gives you something like that, makes you more of a landing spot for potential transfers and things like that, the way that they're recruiting.
It legitimizes what you've done. It's to say, hey, we went from a game that was a team that was, you know, 2 wins in 2 years to a team that went to a bowl game and we're just getting started. Come join us, play at Allegiant Stadium, be in this great city. Absolutely a tremendous selling point. I really don't disagree there. And I think that that's the difference between people like me who've been here forever and people like Marcus Arroyo, right? For him, going to a bowl game is that benchmark that says improvement's been made. And for us, beating Reno is how you say improvements have been made, because not only have you not beaten Reno, you've got your ass kicked the last two times by him. And quite honestly, you didn't care. And that bothers me. And I think it bothers longtime UNLV fans. So I agree with what you're saying. Long timers agree with what you're saying. But I think, you know, hopefully both happen. Hopefully they go to a bowl game and they beat Reno. But I would be completely content with beating Reno.
You think they have a shot against San Diego State? I think they're 9-point underdogs, what I saw, is where they opened. What do you think about their chances there?
So I wonder how rusty Brumfield's going to be. San Diego State in recent memory has had UNLV's number, but San Diego State is not exactly lighting up the scoreboard. So I think UNLV could hang tight in what could be a low scoring game. And if you could get to the second half, you kind of got live action. Going to be interested to see if the offense could pick up where it left off 3 weeks ago with Brumfield and Robbins running the ball. The receivers obviously haven't been great in the last few weeks. So I think it all boils down to what kind of rust does your quarterback have? If he comes out and he's crisp and he's efficient and they're able to pick up some first downs in the, with the run game to open up the pass game, absolutely they have a chance. But if they fall behind early and they're playing catch up and they got to do things that the Brumfield isn't ready to do, then they're in trouble. So I think they got to keep it close early.
That's a point that I've been making for the past few weeks. Like the just if overall big picture, 4-4, good spot to be in this year. I don't think you can criticize the coaching too much to get you to that spot. One thing I would say is that when you, this is a thing, right? Coaches always talk about, like, or you hear, you know, the first X number of plays are scripted. Like we scripted the first 10 plays, or we scripted the first 15 plays, the first drive or two. Like we sequence our plays the way we want to take advantage of the opponent's weaknesses. This is how we think they're going to play it. That's where the chess match is. And UNLV is just getting killed in the first quarter of games this year. Even when they were winning, they were down 17-0 to New Mexico. I think they were down 10-0 Utah State, something like that. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can find this number. After each team has had two possessions this year, UNLV is being outscored 73-26.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that points to either your players are just coming out super flat or you're just not scheming the opening script very well. So I don't want to fall behind San Diego State 10-0. I don't want to fall behind 14-3 after two possessions. So what can Marcus Arroyo whip up? What can he plan? What can he strategize to keep the game close? Like you said, if you keep it close with San Diego State, that's kind of how they play. They invite you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to spot them to a double digit lead after two possessions. So that's what I'm looking at early in that game. That's my big key.
Yeah. And I think you did bring up a good point. You bring up a lot of good points, but yeah, this is a team that was, 4-1, and they need to play like a team that was 4-1. I mean, obviously the schedule was a little light early and they beat teams they were supposed to beat. Well, this San Diego State team is obviously an upgrade in competition, but it's a team that if you're where you think you're at, you should be competitive against. You know, at the very least, it should be a coin flip game. So I think in terms of measuring where the program's at, this game is vitally important. You know, it's a measuring stick. This is a team that has been a premier team in the league. But you think you're close to being on par with them. So let's find out if you are, because beating Hawaii and Reno, while we know the Reno game's important, those are teams that you're supposed to beat, right? And credit to you for doing that. But what about a team that's even or slightly better than you on paper? How do you fare?
Yeah, I would say that the thing that's interesting now that Doug Brumfield is back is that you look at these matchups and quarterback is obviously the most important position on the field, and UNLV probably has a better quarterback than San Diego State. Like he'll be the better of the two quarterbacks.
If he comes back to where he was.
Yeah. So yeah. And I know San Diego State is going through some, they're churning with the quarterback's position, and Brumfield was on a almost like a all conference track early in the year. So even if San Diego State ticks off all the other boxes on the tail of the tape or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
UNLV, like if you've got the better quarterback, you've always got a chance. So as you're saying, like play like that 4-1 team, or at least make it interesting. You do have the better quarterback. So there's no reason why you can't win that game or go in there and be competitive and give yourself a chance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we will see, where the chips fall, if they may. UNLV football at San Diego State. Speaking of UNLV and San Diego State, two basketball teams that love to beat up on each other in a physical style. Basketball back in full flow. They got an opener, what, in 7 days, is it? Or 6 days?
On Monday. They're playing Monday, November 7th. So depending on when you're listening to this, people at home, it's, yeah, about a week away, less than a week.
Mm-hmm. And who knows what to think. We're very, very interested in, as we are every year, in how they're going to look and feel. Not quite sure who's going to be the leading scorer, but we sense they're going to play real hard defense and be prepared to win close games.
That's the blueprint. That's been the blueprint since the start of the offseason. That was their blueprint through the entire transfer portal window, their exhibition series, their close scrimmages, their practices. Like, all they say, like, everything they're saying and doing is, we're going to be try to be deep and physical and high energy and win with defense and play hard and play tough and sort of play that style. So we get our first look at it on Monday to see if you can pull it together. Like, that's a style that has proven that can win. It's proven that it can win in the Mountain West. San Diego State does it every single year. We'll just see now if Kevin Kruger has the, one, recruiting ability and two, coaching ability to pull that off.
Yeah. And, you know, year three for Kevin Kruger at the helm of the program.
Year two
with Kevin. Feels like a third year, Mike. Year two with Kruger at the helm of the program. And there was bits and pieces last year that I really liked, Mike. There was bits and pieces I don't like, but it will be a interesting season. And the schedule is not as tough as I wish it would be. And they're setting themselves up to probably need to win the Mount West to get to the tournament. And that's really what it's about. Is this a team good enough to win to get into the NCAAs?
It's going to take a lot of needle threading, I think, just because, like you mentioned, the non-conference is not very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you go 11-0, you know, undefeated in non-conference and, you know, sort of do that thing, it's going to be really tough to put together a resume that draws any kind of at-large consideration. So yeah, you're going to cultivate this style of play, try to get your players to completely buy in, because that's the one thing about this defense and rebounding style is that one weak link and the whole thing falls apart. So it's like, everybody's got to be committed and everybody's got to buy in for the entire season. And if you're, you know, if you're 16-14 heading into the final week of the season, like, how committed are those kids going to be in the Mountain West tournament? Are they really going to be buying in that, hey, this, what we're doing is working. We can really make a run in the Mountain West tournament and win it all. So it's tough. You've got to,
you think they're going to be 16-14?
I'm just throwing, I don't even know if that math works out with the number of games on the schedule. I'm just saying, like, the style that they're committing to requires a level of buy-in from the players that is uncommon. As a coach, you've really got to whip them into a frenzy to want to play that way. Mm-hmm. Because for most players, it's not fun to do that. It's not fun to say, like, oh, well, I'm going to average 8 points a game and I'm going to have to bust my butt on defense for 40 minutes and do all the little things that, you know, no one cares about from a fan perspective. And I'm only going to get to take six shots and score 7 points a game. So you really have to get the players to believe in it. And to me, that means, like, you've got to have some success early. Like, if you beat Dayton in the third game of the season, who Dayton's opening, they're ranked top 25 in the opening poll. If you spring an upset like that, then, hey, yeah, maybe the players are like, wow, you know, guys, this is working. Let's do this. Let's ride it. But if you're kind of struggling and you're middling and you look down and you're like 9-4 heading into conference play or something, I just wonder if you can carry that through the rest of the season, how that's going to unfold.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about that Dayton game. They're nationally ranked to open the season. Game at your place at 8:00 at night on a Tuesday. Wouldn't it be nice if there could be a true home court advantage that night?
It is. I'm looking at the schedule right now. It is $2 beer night. So they're trying to, get the fans into a frenzy, I think, on that night.
Yeah. And that would be like, you know, I'm just talking out of the box here. If, because the schedule is so light, if you could win a game against Dayton at home and maybe go like, and this is a pipe dream, but maybe go 12-4 in league games and make it to like the semis or the finals of the league tournament, could you maybe qualify to play in a playing game?
There is a path that I think like Wyoming showed last year, which is like, I'd have to go back and look, but speaking off the top of my head for memory, I don't think Wyoming played anyone in non-conference, but they went 11-0. And that's a number that sort of gets the attention of voters. And I think they started getting votes. They might've even been in the top 25 at some point, but yeah, if you can run through a week non-conference schedule and get to like double digits, 10-0, 11-0, mm-hmm. and put yourself in the minds of the selection committee and get people to consider you. And then you carry that momentum into, like you said, a 12-6 or 13-5 or whatever in the league. And you finish in the top three or four, because the Mountain West is usually a 3-4 bid league. So if you can get into the top quarter of the league, then yeah, I guess if you're above 20, like 23, 24 wins, top four in the conference, don't get bounced in the first round of the conference tournament, you could probably cobble together a reason to watch the Selection Sunday show, which would be, to me, a milestone for UNLV. UNLV has not even, fans have not even had to tune into the Selection show in 10 years, which is, that's dire. Like, not only have you not made the tournament in 10 years, you haven't even had a reason to, like, it's been over early for all those teams in the seat. Like, before November is out, you're like, the season's over. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess so. To answer your question in a long-winded way, there is a path to an at-large berth, but it's, you really have to thread the needle.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk personnel real fast, Mike. We think that the Keyshawn Gilbert is an established star. I like the fact that Isaiah Cottrell comes back from West Virginia. Looks like he's finally back on the court. I think he's a decent-sized body in the middle who could step out and hit a jumper if need be. I think they're okay in the backcourt. The transfer from Duquesne heaves it up with the best of them. You know, do they have the best player in the Mountain West? No. Do they have a player who's better than their top two or three guys last year? No. But maybe they have more of a team, Mike.
We were talking to Justin Webster after practice yesterday, and I asked him, you know, just the standard question when you lose a guy who's like a 24 point per game scorer, like, how do you replace that when you know that there's no guy coming in who's going to do it all himself? And Webster was like, he said, yeah, you know, we're not going to have a guy who gives us 30 a night like Bryce Hamilton, but, you know, someone's going to give us 20, someone's going to give 12, then we're going to have a bunch of guys that give us 10, 8, 7 points all the way down the roster. And that's how we're going to win. We have to be egoless. We have to, as long as we win, no one's going to be worried about their own numbers, which sounds good to say a week before the season starts. But like I said earlier, like, my concern is how does that hold up throughout the year? When maybe you lose a couple games, are people still going to be happy to be in their role of scoring 6 points a game? I don't know. But yeah, that's their sort of approach. Like, they don't have a 25 point scorer, but they think they've got nine guys who can give you double figures on any given night. And some nights, you know, David Mwaka might score 12 points and then the next game he might score 2 points. But when he scores two, then it's Luis Rodriguez's turn to score 16 and so on and so on. And you just sort of rotating whoever's night it is, you're just going to have enough group contributions to get to 68 points or 75 points or whatever you need to win the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is optimism, but you're right. It has been a while since they've played a game in March Madness, and it's always nice when the school you went to, you could watch them on that Thursday in March, the second Thursday in March or third Thursday in March, whatever it is.
Do you have a prediction? What do you think? Do you think they can get back to the tournament this year? I mean, that's obviously the goal. Like Kevin Kruger said, the players have been saying it. They want to play in the tournament this year. They're not doing that thing where they say, oh, it's going to take some time. We need a 5-year rebuild, et cetera, et cetera. No one's saying that. They're all saying like tournament this year.
I mean, everybody wants to play in the tournament. I want to live in a mansion, but I mean, it's how do you get there? And the schedule is just, it's just weak, you know, you're not going to, I mean, you need to play Incarnate Word and Life Pacific and Southern U and all those other teams. I mean, every program has some games that they play to get to warm up in. You know what I'm saying? But it's like every game, it's like High Point, Life Pacific, San Diego, you know, Hawaii, Washington State. Okay, there's a Pac-12 opponent. San Francisco, Southern Miss. They have to, Michael, they should be, if they could beat Dayton, why can't they be undefeated in league in non-league games?
That's what I'm looking like. A third of their non-conference games are just scheduled wins. They're just easy wins that UNLV probably doesn't even have to show up and they'll win those games by 20. You look through, if they beat Dayton, if they can find a way to do that, that's the toughest team on their schedule for non-conference. I mean, depending on how you feel about Washington State, I know San Francisco made the tournament last year and San Francisco absolutely drilled UNLV last year. That was the worst game of the season for UNLV when they went up to San Francisco and just got blitzed. It is the kind of non-conference schedule where if you can win a cup, like they only scheduled three tough games. So if you can win two of those, you're looking at an easy 10-1, you know, so that's probably what it's going to. And if you can do that, then like I said, then you're maybe putting yourself in the mix for people to start paying attention to you from that selection committee. So
yeah, and maybe not just 10-1, but maybe a sexy 10-1 where they're beating people by, you know, double digits every night and they're hitting shots and they're having fun.
I don't think, well, having fun, maybe. But the other two things that you said, winning by 20 or double figures and making shots, those are things I have questions about. I don't think they're built to do either of those things.
One 3-pointer a day, a game, Michael, I'll be fine.
Well, there's going to be some nights this year where you are holding your breath. I think they're a pretty bad shooting team and I don't think they're built for blowout wins. Now, of course, they'll blow out some of these teams because some of these teams are just horrible. But I just, as constituted, I don't think UNLV is the type of team that's going to run up triple digits in the non-conference. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to have many nights where they're just scoring at will. So a lot of close games.
Okay. Well, for Mike, I'm Ray. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Wait.
Are they going to make the tournament?
No. Of course not, Michael.
Okay. Just wanted to hear your opinion, your official prediction.
I'd love to be wrong, but I mean, when they lose to Incarnate Word or whoever, because you know they're going to lose one of these games, or it's going to come down to the end where Isaiah Cottrell has to grab a rebound against, you know, the 6'3" center from Life Pacific. You know, it's
maybe they already got that loss out of their system. Maybe they already got that loss out of their system up in Canada, okay, and now they're good to go.
But if they get an ugly loss, that outlawed bit, or would you rather take the 8th team from the SEC that won a game at number 11 Tennessee, or would you rather take the 4th team from the Mountain West that lost at home to Life Pacific? You know,
the Mountain West has gotten the benefit of the doubt in the past few years from the committee, but they have not rewarded the committee for those. Like the Mountain West got 5 teams last year and they all bombed in the tournament. So they may not get the benefit of the doubt this year.
And the NCAA still hates UNLV because of Tarkanian.
So if you leave it up to the committee,
conspiracy theory, Michael,
if you leave it up to the committee, you might be in trouble. So
exactly. All right. Well, for Mike, I'm Ray, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you.